starting a business literally at the bottom of the market in 81 years. Think about that, in a century. It was, people were so terrified. And even today in, you know, 2019, as we think about a recession, there's that recession will not be a recession that we see potentially for a very, very long time.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. How much risk are you really willing to take? It's a nearly impossible question to answer until you actually do it in real life. When you take a giant leap into the unknown, that's when you know how much risk you can tolerate. And let's be honest, to be an entrepreneur, you need to take a lot of risks. Nobody knows that better than Alexa Von Tobel. She left Harvard Business School before graduating and did it during a terrible recession. None of that is easy, but she did it because she had developed a passion for educating everyday Americans about their finances, and she didn't want to wait any longer. She wanted to get out there and do it. Recession be damned. And what happened? Well, a lot of mishaps and hardships and failures. But along the way, she also founded the financial planning company LearnVest, and she eventually sold it to Northwestern Mutual for a reported $375 million. Then she started a fund called Inspire Capital to help other entrepreneurs. For Alexa, success seems to be all about perseverance and mission. She took the challenging route because she knew it was the more rewarding one. And so I wanted to talk to her about how she is able to turn negatives into positives and how she took bad experiences and made them the good drivers of her business. It's a skill set any entrepreneur needs. And Alexa had advice in spades. So Alexa has a lot to say about what it takes to persevere and take on risk. It's kind of a superpower, as far as I'm concerned, and we'll get there soon enough. But when we sat down to talk, I wanted to understand that first big risk she took. So I asked her, why leave school and start a business in the absolute middle of an economic meltdown?
Sure. So my story was, my last day of Harvard Business School was December 18th of 2008. I had told the admissions office, shortly before that I was going to drop out and take a leave of absence. I found this kind of unique loophole where you, after one semester, you could actually take up to 5 years off and you could come back any time as long as you were in good standing. And so I always joke when people are like, tell us your biggest challenge, because first of all, starting a business literally at the bottom of the market in 81 years. Think about that, in a century. It was, people were so terrified. And even today in, 2019, as we think about a recession, there's that recession will not be a recession that we see potentially for a very, very long time, if ever in my lifetime. It was such an acute recession. And so starting a, small business where you're like, who wants to give me seed capital to go build something, when I was 24 years old, a young woman, had never been a CEO, had never started a big company, and that was my game plan. And so, I think the sheer adversity of it all, the fact that I dropped out to go do that then probably speaks volumes of just my insane commitment to when I want to do something. But on the flip side, it was like, when you're driving and the rain is so heavy that at some point you can't see. That was essentially, it was like, let's go for a walk in the sunny day. And that was the day I started my company. It was just that severe of heaviness. And I had to go figure out a way to grow a plant.
And it's incredible, because I think for a lot of people, and I can't believe it's already been like 10 years or 11 years, that was really frightening time.
For everybody.
For everyone. It was much different than the tech bubble burst in the late 90s. And
people were losing their homes. Couldn't pay their bills.
I remember just listening to some of the television programs, radio broadcasts, and literally felt in my gut this panic that the world as we know it in America and capitalism is going to collapse. So here you are at 24, What made you make the jump right then? And what made you take the leave? Did you have a great idea? Did you think there was a business?
So I'd written the business plan for LearnBass, which stood for learn, earn, invest, the three pillars of money. You have to learn about it, you have to earn it, and then you have to take care of it. When I was, I had a day job at Morgan Stanley, and nights and weekends, I started just like jotting down this idea for a company that should exist. And it really was born out of the simplest idea, which was, I was young, I'd started making my first real paychecks, and I remember thinking to myself, I don't know what to do with my money. And, you know, I went to Harvard undergrad, had gotten into Harvard Business School.
If you don't know what to do with your money.
Accounting at MIT, was sitting there working as a trader at Morgan Stanley, phenomenal at math, and I was almost awestruck by the fact that I couldn't answer basic questions. How many credit cards should I have? Which credit card do I apply for? What is a 401k and how is it different than my IRA? Do I do an IRA or do I do a 401k? What can I truly afford in rent? I just moved to New York City. I was born in Kentucky, grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. So it was just the fact that the basics, what can I afford in rent? I had no idea. It was like nobody had taught me what does it mean to live within my means. And I've always been a frugal, kind of thoughtful person. I am not somebody who's like, let's just spend as much money as possible. Right. And I'd rather give it to other people. It's important to me now that I'm a mom to raise our kids to have like very simple values when it comes to money. And I couldn't understand what to do with my own wallet. And so I wrote a business plan. And then that business plan became this like infection. It was like, I was so intellectually passionate about it that I started working on it all the time. And then it became like this, I am not being true to this thing inside me. I need to go do this
full
time.
So you had that.
And then I won a business plan competition. And
did that give you a lot of confidence to say like, hey, or did you really know right off the bat, like, hey, I could do this? Or did you have some fear? Were you worried about launching this business?
I think I had a lot of confidence in my own skills because I had done the work that I knew it was a big opportunity. I knew that if I put my head down and just like sheer willpower and put the hard work in, that I would figure out what could be successful. I had a lot of fear of the basics of like starting a company in the middle of a really bad recession. And I think what's important is I had started the business in May of 2007. That's when I incorporated it. Fun fact, my now husband's dad was the lawyer. My husband was my boyfriend, and my husband's dad literally incorporated the company. My mom was the president. I mean, literally, because I needed a second signature, and I trust my mom so much. And so basically between May of 2007 and December of 2008, that's pretty much about a year and a half where I had thought about this every day. And finally, it was like I was denying this thing that I needed to go create, and I had to go do it. And it just – it literally was – it didn't matter that it was a recession to me. It was like, if I don't go do this, I'm like not doing what I'm supposed to be doing with my life.
And what was holding you back at that time that it took a year and a half really was
– it was doing the work. And so I needed to write the business plan. I needed to know what we were creating. I needed to know how to – stand it up. You know, I think we live in a world today in 2019 that's really different. And one of the reasons why I founded Inspired Capital was I was so excited because, you know, 10 years ago when I was starting LearnBass, your best seed fund would give you a $50,000 check. And there was no money. It was like, when you get real revenue and a real product and you have a real team, we'll think about funding you. And I truly was like, how do I get this business up? And it was like beg, borrowing, and stealing. It was like the whole creativeness to say, okay, how do I get a little bit of design? How do I get some engineering talent? How do I get people to work for equity so that, you know, on their nights and weekends till I could stand up the business? Because there was really no clear way to just stand up a company. And now, 10 years later, you can work out of all sorts of places.
Sure.
There's code academies. There's seed funds. Everyone's an angel investor.
Yep.
It's so much easier. But I still believe that talking to entrepreneurs who have done it before is the best way to build a business because they are crafty, creative, and the ones that have been proven know what it takes to get there.
Yeah, totally. That's why I love doing this show, too. It's so great. I get to talk to all these incredible, bright entrepreneurial minds. And for me, that's always the best way to learn. But for you at that time, you're 24 years old. You realize no one's going to really give you money. You have to be extremely gritty. So how did you get it from that beginning business plan to kind of that next stage where you really got going?
Great question. So I dropped out of business school. I had a little bit of my own money.
And when you dropped out of business school, Were your parents?
Everyone was nuts. So actually, it was amazing. A dear friend of mine who sat next to me was with me a week ago. Now, keep in mind, I've sold my business.
Right.
Almost $375 million.
You're very different, right.
And he reminded everybody. He was like, we thought she was nuts. We were like, it's kind of like I was jumping off the platform.
Right.
You know, of the pirate ship, and everyone's like, oh, she's not going to make it.
I mean, it's Harvard. It's not like you left some business school where, I mean, like to graduate, to go to Harvard Business School, you pretty much set yourself up for connections and
everything.
Yeah.
And I was just in a clear job and a clear, you know, despite the recession, and you didn't know how long the recession would last. You didn't know, like, would we ever make
money?
It's
like a perfect time to stay in business school.
You know, literally, that's the whole point. It was, it was literally the perfect time to be in business school. It was like a cozy womb of clear jobs and everything. And I was like, I'm going to go jump off this platform into the ocean. And I think so our friend was reminding everybody, he was like, we thought she was nuts. It was not cool. It was not glamorous. And now I always laugh a bit because entrepreneurship is so glamorous and every cool magazine and blah, 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 blah. And I was honored Forbes put me on the cover of their magazine. And but real entrepreneurs know it's not glamorous. The ones who have really done it know that it is blood, like sweat, tears. I always joke, you get through the marathon, not beautiful, not with your ponytail perfect, not with makeup on. You literally limp through with half your limbs hanging off and you finish. That is real entrepreneurship. And it takes that DNA to want to do it.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. I mean, I think for all entrepreneurs, and it's great because, you know, a lot of people who listen to this podcast and people who want to be successful entrepreneurs, a lot of times you only see the a picture of someone on the cover of Forbes or whatever it might be, and they're extremely successful. But every single entrepreneur I talk to has so many war stories, so many great, so many times where the business could have failed, went another way. You really, to be successful, have to be extremely gritty. And unfortunately, a lot of times you can't see that part of it. But for you at the time, so you leave the school, and then how does it get, going back to that original question before I cut you off, was how does it get to that point from business plan to then getting this thing going?
So at that point, I had a clear business plan. So January 1st of 2009, I remember it was my first real day of work. I let myself have the holidays with my family. And then I remember opening my laptop and being like, I'm at work right now, but I'm alone on a couch because I had no place to work. I was literally working out of my then boyfriend's apartment because I couldn't even afford to like get an apartment in New York. I was like, I'm still paying for my rent in business school because I'd signed a 1-year lease in business school. Again, all the logistics that are just going into standing things up. And what I remember that first day, I was terrified. I was like second guessing, did I do the right thing? And then I started working. And I remember after finishing that first day of work, I'd done more in that 1 day of work because it was full time. Then I'd been able to months, like a full month prior, like I just sent 350 emails. It was like, I started an internship program on Harvard and Princeton's campus. I started asking for every angel investor that I could possibly get connected to. And what I started doing was three things: fundraising, building a team, and then figuring out a way to hack together a early prototype of what I wanted to build so that I could, because it's easier to see it than say it.
Right.
So I'll repeat that. It is easier to see it than say it. So if you can show somebody what you're building, exactly what the product experience is going to be, the better. So I just started drawing images and like showing people what this prototype would look like of being able to get a financial plan online. And the idea of what LearnBest was content, tools, and advice for the next wave of digital consumers.
Sure.
And we ended up in the end, when we got acquired, we built TurboTax for financial planning. So LearnBest was the simplest and most affordable way to get a financial plan with an advisor. And it was all transparent. And we ended up selling to Northwestern Mutual on our fifth birthday. But it was that first, like multiples of months was brutal. And actually my husband at our wedding, the night of our wedding, my husband gave a speech to everybody. And he's like, and keep in mind, the night of our
wedding. How long was the wedding after you started the business?
We got married in 2013, and I dropped out of business school 2008.
Okay.
So about you were into 4 years later.
Right, and you, okay.
And keep in mind, we'd not been on the cover of Forbes magazine. We'd not been acquired. And my husband, you know, at that time was like, you know, everyone kind of looks to Alexa because entrepreneurship had become very cool in that four-year window. And we'd at that point raised about $50 million in funding. And my husband, on that night of our wedding, so obviously an important night in my life, told everybody the story of those first few months. And he was just like, it was, you got to see the real grit of Alexa's character, where she can face adversity. She can lean in when others are leaning out. She believes in her idea. She believed it. I believed every American family deserves a financial plan. Financial planning should not be a luxury product. I didn't think it was fair. It felt unfair that if you have a lot of money, you get great advice. And if you don't, nobody gives a darn to give you advice.
So is that the mission driving you?
It was such a massive mission. And the mission got bigger as we got deeper into it. And so we ended up building 10 employees, 100 employees, 150 employees, 200 employees. And then, Northwestern Mutual had the same mission. And so it seemed so obvious for us to team up. But anyway, so basically over the next 5 years, we raised 5 rounds of venture funding, totaling $73 million. We sold on our 5th birthday, March 25th of 2015, about exactly 5 years from the site being up and running with live customers, to Northwestern Mutual for about $375 million. And I had our first child that weekend. So again, literally once again,
so many great things come out of
all in the same week. It was just, and I just say, at this point, I feel like I've been kind of tried and tested in every way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what building character is. It's having really big, true challenges and getting right back up and keep going.
And were there times, and your husband's a smart man, especially for giving that speech.
He is the best decision I've ever made.
Wow, that is very nice. I'm sure hopefully he'll listen to this podcast, or I'll send him a copy. But those first couple months on the couch there, and that grit, and going back to that time, were there times you wanted to quit, or did it?
No. The one thing that's really, really, really clear is there was never a time I wanted to quit. There was not even a time that it wasn't even on the dashboard of things to think about. There were times where I wanted to throw up because it was so bad, where it was an important hire was not working out at the exact time that a business deal went wrong, at the exact time where we were having a growing pain of our business model. And I just couldn't believe that so many challenges could happen in the same day. And my husband will remember all of those days too, because I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
I would be I don't think I could possibly go to bed tonight. Or it would be, I would wake up at 3 and just lie there and attempt to will myself back to sleep. But then finally I just learned that when that happens for me, I just have to start working, because the only thing that actually lowers my stress levels is just work. Work just actually creates calm. And so, but no, there was never a chance I wanted to quit. There was never a chance that I didn't believe we would figure it out. But there were moments where I was like, I cannot believe the amount of pain tolerance that I have to be able to make this successful. And again, this kind of gives you a sense of, we built our new firm, Inspired Capital, which is an early stage seed and Series A fund here in New York, because we took people who had been investors and entrepreneurs, and we said, you just simply go farther when you have people that understand the sheer cracks, the sheer, and can call it. And I had this amazing board member who had built a company, sold it for almost $1 billion. And he used to tell me the toughest news. And every time he would say something, it was like, oh man, because he's about to tell me my next challenge. And it's about pain tolerance. How much pain tolerance can you have as a human? And he also brought with it the most empathy, because he really, really, really understood that building a company is brutal. And actually the nicest thing you can do to the entrepreneur is tell them their pain earlier so that it's less big. So the sooner you, I call it LITTP, lean into the pain. LITTP,
I like that.
Lean into the pain, because the sooner you do it, the better. You want to fix problems before they get too big. And so it's about being able to have problem detection.
Yeah, I think that for entrepreneurs, and knowing myself in building businesses, it's being able to deal with that pain and being able to then pick yourself up and keep going. And something in you, when that happens, for me, it was always, I want to show them. This is the worst news I could get, but I'm going to make it right. I'm going to do this. And I think if you don't have that in your character or that willpower, I think that's why a lot of entrepreneurs fail. I don't know if you agree, but it seems to me like you had a lot of challenges, a lot of pain, but you kept getting up off the mat.
Yeah, I think they call it grit, right?
Yeah.
Which is just comfort with, it's like this deeper belief in yourself, this deeper belief in what you're working towards, a comfort with being swimming against the grain. because it's so cute. By the way, my four-year-old, my husband, the class when she was 2.5 was voting on the name for their class, and everybody wanted to be the Spaghettis, and like the whole class voted to be the Spaghettis, and my daughter voted to be like the Giraffes,
right?
And she had one vote to their 7, and we took a photo of it and we emailed it to her. She's an email address, and we were so proud that at that young age she could say, I want to do something else.
Yeah.
And I think that's really an important quality to instill in people, which is, if you like something, if you believe in something, be true to whoever you are, be true to what you believe in. And that's okay. And it's really hard to do, because it's really hard to develop that muscle. And I think that's part of the muscle that we are as entrepreneurs. You are often out there alone on, yeah. I'm forgetting what they call the pirates thing that you have to walk
the plank.
The plank. You are on the plank alone. And you have to be okay jumping by yourself and knowing that you can swim. And I really do believe it's a belief in yourself. It's also, and let me be very clear, it's not a blind jump. You have to be like, I'm grabbing the people around me that are smarter than me. I'm grabbing the people who can help me. I'm going to listen to feedback. I'm going to listen to people tell me what I'm not good at. I'm going to listen to people like spot my challenges. And rather than that shutting me down, it's going to wake me up. And I think that's a really, again, another really important point, which is like, challenges have to wake you up. Stress should wake you up, not shut you down.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so important. That's what, it's either you go two ways, and most people, I think, go the other way, unfortunately, where it shuts you down because of fears. And but if it challenges you and you rise to the occasion, you get over it, and then soon enough, you become successful. And for you, you start the business, it gets going, and then only 5 years later, how does that come about where you build a business in a five-year period and all of a sudden someone comes to you and is waving hundreds of millions of dollars?
I think it's from businesses don't get sold that are trying to get sold. We truly weren't trying to get acquired. We had just raised $35 million. We had $52 million of cash in the bank. We were focused. We finally had just started to see the wheels turning. We sold subscription model financial planning online. And then we launched a business-to-business enterprise software sale called Learn Best at Work, where companies could buy Learn Best for all of their employees to be able to get a financial plan. And that was humming. And we were, you know, able to see 100,000 paying customers, 200,000 paying customers. That's a real business. And so we were just beginning to see that when we had acquisition opportunities.
And what do you think at that time? Because as an entrepreneur, I've always found like if someone offers you a certain amount of money, and it goes back to my thing, like I remember Groupon was offered like billions and they turned it down. And it's like, do you take the money or, and this is my thought, you could have a completely different thought, but like take the money and like sell because this is going to be life-changing for me and my family? Or do you say, wait, I'm sitting on something even bigger and I want to hold on?
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to why I started the company, which is I deeply, deeply believed that every American family should have access to a financial plan. And I was sitting in a position where the CEO of Northwestern Mutual, John Schlifsky, is an incredible guy. Incredible. I would follow him into a dark forest, literally just a good human in all ways. And he had said to me, I think we can team up and our missions can come together and we can create 1 + 1 = 5.
Right.
And I saw that, which is we created software and they had millions of clients. And overnight, if we could take our software and give it to 5 million people,
sure,
and Northwestern Mutual can deliver 1 million financial plans a year, why wouldn't I do that?
Right.
And our little engine, our little startup engine, couldn't get that. We couldn't even get close to that when I saw our model. And I believed we'd created something that was really special, had patents and all of these different important traits of our software, the core of our software that we created, which is pretty geeky. So I became a certified financial planner, wrote a New York Times bestselling book. Our team became financial planners. We literally built software that was cash flow based. So it could take a normal family and say, do you have enough cash each month? Which most families, the answer is no. So the fact that our most, and by the way, most financial planning software was focused on literally multimillionaires who don't have to worry, can they pay their bills? So the software didn't work for America.
Right.
And so we built everyday American software. And I will say, like, I am a true patriot. I love America. I believe in this country. I believe in the values of this country.
Love
and
it.
I really believe that every American family should have dignity. And to provide dignity to your family, you need to be able to feel like you can pay your bills.
Yeah.
And it just really, again, I was born in Kentucky, grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. Both my parents were in the Army. Like, really believe in, like, the wholesome values of, like, every family should be able to pay their bills.
Yeah.
And anyways, our software was able to do that. And it worked for somebody who made $30,000, and it worked for somebody who made $30 million. And that was really special. So anyways, teaming up with Northwestern Mutual was the right move for our mission. And I also, by the way, had 500 stakeholders between investors and employees and the board. And I remember taking my job as CEO incredibly seriously, which was my legal job as CEO of the company was to be a steward on behalf of all of my constituents, which was the employees, my customers, my users, and all of the investors. And your job as CEO is actually to bring the opportunities to the board and then make a decision. So actually, like, had basically like a lobotomy in my brain where I was like, I'm not allowed to be Alexa and think about what I want.
Right. You were able to separate yourself.
I need to do my job. And I took that so, and I remember, again, I was 30. I mean, I'd never done this. I took that job so seriously in my heart, which was like, my job is to go get the best opportunity on behalf of all of those constituents, bring it to the board. And I remember by the time that I got to think, it was literally the day that we were signing the documents.
Yeah. So how... that day comes, right? And you realize now that what you created because of that mission of wanting to put this in every family's hands, it's going to just be incredibly magnified. At the same time, you sell the business, you deliver to all your shareholders, stakeholders, to yourself. Do you remember what that day felt like, or like right after it closed, the transaction?
Yeah, I will never, ever, ever forget. I think that probably is like, that week of my life, I always say, if I can handle that week, I can pretty much handle everything. Because selling your business is not like you're skipping. I mean, it's just like there's tons of last minute challenges. There's a lot of hurdles that you're going through. It's a ton of emotion. And then on the other side is like an even bigger effort, because it's like, again, ours was a phenomenal exit. There's nothing negative about it, but that still doesn't mean that it creates a ton of uncertainty immediately for everybody on the team. Do they have jobs? What's this look like? You just have a bazillion questions that you need to answer. And I was actually 9 months pregnant,
okay.
9 months pregnant. So we sold on a Wednesday and I had a baby that weekend.
What? Wait, and hold on. You sold on Wednesday.
And I literally went to bed. We did Thursday, full day of television, like with the CEO of Northwestern Mutual and I had like blurriness in my vision that morning because it's a pregnancy symptom. Literally couldn't read a teleprompter. I was like, of course I'm going on television today. Why else would
Of course.
Friday, I came in, got to tell the whole team our plan in detail, and literally got to go home, pack a hospital bag, get a full night's sleep, and woke up in labor.
That is crazy. That's so interesting.
Yeah, and even crazier, my daughter ended up in the NICU. She was fine. But so it was like, then I had a week where I was like, my daughter was on antibiotics and I was still triaging. Like,
I couldn't be in the emotions.
And by the end of that week, I was like, I have literally had every single test triage that you can have as a human. And I always joke, I'm like, getting through that week has given me just an incredible ability now to just handle trucks.
It's like, what else?
I'm like, throw a truck at me.
Right.
Like, I got it. Cause nothing will compare to that.
And it seems like when you do get trucks thrown at you, that's what then propels you, going back to some of the things you said. It's like that, you know, lean into those problems. And it sounds like that did it, but I can only imagine like the highs and lows of that week from just your daughter being in the NICU, which is a really scary thing. My youngest was also in the NICU for a bunch of days. And like, there's nothing more important than that.
Yeah. I mean, she's your first child, right? You have no idea.
Oh, my God.
And she was fine. Luckily, it was very quick. We knew that she was fine, but it was just all of that, right?
Yeah.
And it just, again, going back to when things get hard, do you get better?
Right.
And for me, I think, you know, I joke, I was just like that. That was a very formative week, obviously, in my life. But it also taught me a lot of just how much, like I think we forget that as humans, like you always have an extra gear that you can shift into. And we're really capable of handling a lot of stress. It shouldn't be your norm, but you can. And I think it just taught me a lot of you know, I have my own protocols between sleep and exercise and what I eat, just to try to, you know, the vitamins I take, the doctors I make sure I see, just to try to take care of yourself, because I think you're better at handling a lot of stress when you're not the, you know, you're most frayed. So sleep is really critical. My mom always taught me, like, everything is better after a good night's sleep. And it's just so like, true. It is so true.
I'm such a huge believer. And with my wife every night, I'm like, I want to be in bed by 10, sleeping. Like, or I just don't feel good the next day. And my energy's gone. Of course, she likes to watch TV, and we got a TV in our, you know, Ariana Huffington, like, book at her. And like, for you, it sounds like the wellness and health of yourself is extremely important, because you go through, you've had to be so gritty in these challenges, and sometimes you can't. But what is really important to you, like sleep, and obviously, is there other things you do to take care of yourself?
I think it's all the core things that like make you well, right? Yeah. It's having good relationships with my family and friends is a critical component. If those aren't great, you're stressed. Making sure that my home is in order and everybody feels calm and stable, because my home life cannot be chaotic. Like, my work life can be chaotic, but my home life cannot. And then it's just those basics. It's like, sure. Eat, sleep, rest, exercise. I wear a Fitbit. I've worn a Fitbit forever. And so I always know when, like, I'm rocking right now 3 really good nights of sleep in a row, which is so rare. and I just always kind of teeter between catching up, and I really believe in sleep. And then finally, I'll just say the firm we just started, Inspired Capital, is really about getting ahead of those entrepreneurs of tomorrow. Like, I want to go find the 24-year-old who is excited to go build that next company, because the amount of pain I can save them is vast. And just you learn so much when you're on the field.
Yeah.
You really do. And I do believe so much of entrepreneurship is apprenticeship. And our teammates at Inspired Capital are people like Lucy DeLand, who is a co-founder of Paperless Post, who built a company that is incredible and actually will touch 100 million people this year. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. And Penny Pritzker, who has built 6 companies before. And one thing that a gentleman named Mark Batsian, who I've worked with for a decade, and he and I were the deal team when we got acquired, what we did was we were literally like, how do we bring together people who know how to build companies? And Penny's built 6 and sold 6. And you quickly begin to learn all of these skill sets and these tricks and these paying that forward to somebody for tomorrow, so that they don't have to have the intensity. Those days where I like thought I was going to throw up. I don't want people to have those days.
Do you think though, it's kind of like I equate it to, as a parent, you have a child and you don't want them to go through certain things because you see the pain, you remember that pain. Now with Inspire and investing in young entrepreneurs, and you say you can save them a lot of that pain, but is there a balance between what they have to go through and...
Yep, you know, 100%. Some pain the entrepreneur just needs to go through. And, you know, I will say that's the growth, the maturity, as you grow as a leader. Some of that's required. Some of it is just straight up, I made dumb mistakes.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Some of it is just straight up, I just didn't know how to hold the ball, right? And some of that is just, it trips up execution, or like actually just some technical decisions that we made that we then had to remake, and they're expensive to the business, or, you know, business partnerships that we stood up that we thought would turn out. And in fact, again, my incredible board member was like, they're never going to turn out just the way you want them to, and you need to be prepared. And by the time he could tell me that, we didn't make those mistakes going forward, but I'd made them before I met him. It's those sort of things where some of them is just like you need to fall down and skin your own knees, but you don't need to like get dragged
on
the ground, which is some of the decisions that you will make when you just don't have the insights.
Yeah. I want to talk about Inspire, but I first want to ask you, what was it like going from running your own business to working for someone else?
That's a great question. I'm so thrilled it happened to me. It was probably one of the most important growth opportunities. And keep in mind, I love Northwestern Mutual. They're a wonderful company. The team over there are probably some of the best people on the planet. Incredible values, really believe in the customer. And it was a privilege. And I really do mean that. And by the way, it's so rare that an entrepreneur sells their company and feels that way.
100%.
It is so rare. In fact, most entrepreneurs within 1 year of selling their business are trying to sneak out the side door. I learned so much in those 3 years, and I admire the CEO. He is one of the most elegant, like, brilliant guys, and I I think probably the place I learned the most was watching him have to make really hard calls and how he made them and how he communicated and how fair of a human he is. But I became chief digital officer. I joined the management team. I was helpful to their digital transformation. And it was just a really valuable time for me to see the big companies that are going to exist all over this country, frankly, all over this planet, yeah. that are going to have to go through big digital transformations yeah. because technology is here to stay and it's moving rapidly. Yeah. And it creates and poses all sorts of challenges for big companies. And it was just wonderful to see what that was like, having, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of budget at my disposal.
It's just, nice, right?
it just really taught me. My husband always said to me, he was like, Alexa, you were able to do so much with so little. And then if you think about what can you do when you actually have yeah. tons of resources at your fingertips as an entrepreneur, it's really powerful.
Did you find that you were able, because, you know, kind of playing the small ball and building your business without the budgets and then having that, did it equate where you were able to really
scale up so much more faster? I mean, that's yeah. kind of the thing, is like, it's a mindset. When you come with like a bit of a starvation mindset of how do we make the absolute best decisions, and then when you can deploy capital in a more effective way against those clear strategic goals, you can do a lot more. And again, just it was a wonderful, wonderful experience for me to be inside a Fortune 50 company sure. that, you know, does almost $35 billion in revenue. And getting a real sense of what mechanisms look like inside big companies, I just learned a lot. So I viewed it as like MBA in corporate intelligence, and I really did view it as such. But again, I also just really learned a lot from watching a few of the people inside the company that I admired so much, who were just brilliant and taught me, and they invested in me and they treated me incredibly well.
So tell me, you make the decision, I assume, to leave and to start this incredible company, which really focuses on, like you said, entrepreneurs, early stage businesses. What is it where you finally decide to leave and start the business, and what was the plan?
It goes back to just, I'm so mission driven. If I'm going to do anything, like somebody once said to me, figure out what you're good at and then get in that lane as early in your career as you can. And so at this point, I think I've identified the things that I'm talented at. There's lots of things, by the way, that I'm not talented at. And get into the lane quickly. And what I realize is, if I really believe in something, just like with all pores, I'm going to do a really great job. And for me, I, for free, would take entrepreneurs of tomorrow and give them guidance. I would bet on them, help them like rip their plans up to be the core ones that they need to go focus on, and then help them execute. That early stage zero to call it Series B, Series C, when it's early, when you're still under 200 employees, is a delight for me. It's a playground intellectually. And the bigger the challenges, the more fun, the harder it is. Those problems don't scare me. And so I started realizing nights and weekends I was doing this for free. And my husband, again, is a brilliant man, best decision I've made in my life.
This guy's getting a lot of props today. I'll tell you, he must be a really good guy.
Unfortunately, he is that good. everyone likes him more than me, I always joke.
Well, my wife, I'm not having her listen to this episode. That is for sure.
My husband said to me, he was like, you are doing this nights and weekends. Maybe this should be what you do full time. And I was at the point where I had a bunch of job offers coming at me to go be CEO of companies or join firms or start a new company, blank checks. And it was that moment of soul searching where it said, what do you really want to do next? And I realized, I was like, I already know what I want to do right. next, which is, I believe that the East Coast should have an incredible firm like a Sequoia here. Mm. I believe that early stage, I believe New York City's ecosystem is thriving and is just getting very, very smart very quickly. And again, 10 years ago, my business partner, Lucy DeLand, and I were two kids starting companies with nothing. And we built some of this ecosystem. We know so many people so well in it. And we just said, let's go help the entrepreneurs of tomorrow go better and go farther faster. And it just literally came out of my mouth one day. I was like, you know what? It's Inspired Capital.
Right.
And then I was like, oh my God, is that name taken? And we were able to get it, which is incredible to me because it's such a simple name. It's
totally.
Obviously.
Was the domain, was like it, even the domain
we,
was
we
available?
We were able to get everything. Inspired Capital, boom. And so we were like, let's go do that. And we, you know, are so sincere in our commitment to help entrepreneurs go farther, go faster, help them hire talent, help them, you know, chew on the nails that they need to quickly, LITTP, lean into the pain. And it just happened. And from there, you know, we quickly stood the firm up earlier this year. And pulled together the best and the brightest that I've ever had the pleasure of working with in my career. And again, we were in business and now we're up and operational and we're starting to deploy capital.
So what, in terms of deploying that capital and looking for businesses, can you talk about some of the businesses you've already started to work with and what you really look for in a business?
Yeah. So I'll just give you two quick ones. We were involved in a Series A. We co-led a Series A in a company called Chief, which is subscription services to bring women to the top of companies. And it provides them executive coaching and all of the input and community and support that they need. And again, having lived through my experience at Northwestern Mutual, I realized how valuable those opportunities are. That company is going gangbusters. 1,500 members in New York City, waitlists of close to 8,000 around the country, and your absolute best and brightest. And so I had met the entrepreneur a long time ago and just watched her execute. So Ken Chenal, the former CEO of Amex, and I both took the board seats there. And then we led another deal called RHO. It's a small business bank, and it's really simple. Having been the entrepreneur, you want your bank to do more, knowing financial services as well as I do. What we loved about this was your bank should have things like QuickBooks and Slack built into it. It should be incredibly digital and super nimble. And that's a place where the incumbents lack technology. And in fact, we deal with abysmal service because there's no other option.
Right.
And Roe came out, and the two entrepreneurs are just killers. And they came out with an idea of, why don't we just create the most delightful small business digital bank and just go after that? And we'd been investors when we were at Northwestern Mutual and Chime. So we know that space really well. Chime's a digital neobank for individuals, consumers, and Rose, the small business category. So, and that's a deal where Mark, my business partner, took the board seat. And again, fantastic team. So they just launched. They have wait lists of customers. So if you're there listening, small business bank, Rogue, go check it out, RHO. There's a few other things we have up our sleeve right now.
So in terms of, and I know we have just a little bit of time left, do you look at the person who is operating the business?
100%. Of course.
So the idea is, or the business is secondary?
No. Everything matters. We don't even have a conversation if there's not an excellent entrepreneur. And that goes back to the entrepreneurs of today. You know, the world right now is relatively easy. And it will get harder. I don't know if that's tomorrow, 2 years from now, five years from now, 7 years from now, a decade from now. But you have to be an entrepreneur that we believe can live through some of the sheer pain that we've all tolerated, and just somebody who's exceptionally capable at building a visionary business, going after a big category creating opportunity. And that's what we look for. And we really like to get to know the entrepreneurs, mainly because we end up being their red phones. We end up often being the first phone call when they really have a challenge that's keeping them up at night.
So I totally appreciate all your time today, and that was awesome. I think just knowing about your story, and it was really inspiring, no pun intended, especially I think what you said and thinking back to loving this country, and you grew up, it sounds like, in family of people
all
who
doctors,
were in the doctors
and nurses
and care. And I just love what you said, like, we do have such an incredible opportunity in this country to go out and start a business or build a business. And it is a good time now, and that will change. But I found that really inspiring. I'm so glad that you've already achieved so much success and you're so young. So,
well, thanks for calling me young. I don't know that I feel that way every day, but I am still mid-30s.
I guess three kids will do that to you.
Yeah, I always joke. I'm like, you know, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on. Such a pleasure, and just really honored to get to even have a chance to tell my story.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter @Robert Tuchman, that's R-O-B-E-R-T, TUCHMAN, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuckman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.